Howdy, listener, and thanks for tuning into our podcast, The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. My name is Izzy.
And my name is David. Each week, one of us will pick a movie that the other has not seen. We will deep dive into our individual takes and historical background of the movie.
Please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at TML A Journey Through Cinema and Twitter at TML A Journey.
Hello, and welcome to The Movie Log. Today, we're traveling to 2019 to look at the movie Booksmart, written by Emily Halpern, Sarah Haskins, Susanna Fogel, and Katie Silberman, directed by Olivia Wilde, starring Caitlin Dever, Beanie Feldstein, Billy Lord, and Jason Sudeikis. All right. How are you doing today, Izzy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Let's talk about a movie, a really fun movie, actually.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it the first time that I watched it, and I was really hoping that you would enjoy it.
It is fun. For those who don't know, the basic plot is two female high school students who discover on their last day of school that the students who partied all through high school got accepted to the same colleges they did. In an attempt to rectify this problem, the best friends try to attend the biggest party of the year.
Yes, both the main characters are valedictorian and salutatorian. The second in the school, I can never figure out what the second one is. It's a very interesting concept. We see this a lot, especially in high school movies, where like the prim and proper girl or the nerd go out and party for one day in high school, and they're the wildest and craziest guy and at the party. But it was kind of like a nice little spin on it.
Compared to high school movies that I grew up with and all the way through the 90s and 2000s, they didn't have to give up being smart to have fun. That's one of the things that usually what happens is in these high school movies, the nerd or the really serious guy has to learn how to have fun, and to some varying successes. And once they learn how to have fun, then the world opens up to them, where the main characters in this film, they were having fun. They were fun people. They just were focused on other things. And when people got to know them, they were still able to be smart and funny and have very serious, be very serious about certain things and still have fun. I like the fact that introducing a sense of humor to these characters throughout the film wasn't the purpose. At the beginning, the first thing you see them do is have this little funny dance with each other, and they seem to be having fun. So it tells you right off the bat that the characters aren't as serious as in the past some of these other high school movies where it's the dude or the nerd has to learn to have fun, to learn to live. They're already having a very fulfilling life.
Yes, exactly. It's don't have to give up your smartness to have fun, but it's also not good just to focus solely on your smartness and your academics, because that, as we see with examples from multiple teachers and other students, that sucks away at your soul when you just focus on work and you don't have time outside of school or work to actually be yourself.
I see where you're going there. I thought the focus was more about letting the rest of the group, letting their guard down to letting the rest of the group know that they have fun. And other people assumed that they had fun, just not with them. And so it was at certain points in the movie, you start realizing the people are saying, oh, you're at our party now. That's cool. You're here at our party. It wasn't like, what are you doing here? And I also like the fact that there's kids at various levels of development in this story. They're not all on the same level, which is usually all the boys are moronic and all the girls are some level of, you know, trying to change the world. If this is a boy movie where the two leads were men, they probably would try to be going, the two leads are usually going from the moronic stage to slightly aware stage that there's a world around them where that was already taken care of in this film. They were already aware of the world around them. We've watched high school films in the past. How do you think this lines up with them? And how does it take on the high school movie tropes? And how does it challenge some of those tropes?
I think that this movie kind of adds a little bit more realism into the high school tropes, since not everybody is such a one-dimensional character. There is high stakes and expensive houses, but it's in the sense of reality. It's not just like, where are their parents? You know, where you watch all these movies and you're just like, how is their parents not noticing this? Well, they add a little bit of realism. It allows it to be put into a world that's a little bit more centered in our own. And I think that allows us to see ourselves in the characters better.
Well, a lot of high school movies, including parodies of high school movies, set people up in jocks, brains, or nerds, the smart girls, the mean girls, those kind of cliques, and then it's the battle between those different cliques. This movie seemed to be a little less cliquey. Like, you saw groups of people that were always associated with each other, but it didn't seem to be so heavy, like, these are the jocks, those are the skaters, although that was implied, but...
It kind of, yeah, when you see the stereotypical cafeteria scene, you know, where, like, in Mean Girls, they say it best with that montage of, like, this is where these people sit, this is where these people sit. You don't get that stereotypical cafeteria scene in this movie. You see that the skaters and the jocks and the stoners and the pretty girls and all the people are just sitting in the same areas and the same tables, moving from table to table, which is a little bit more realistic in what actual high school is, or at least in my experience.
So this movie was directed by Olivia Wilde. It was written by, like I said, Emily Halpern, Sarah Haskins, Susanna Fogel, and Katie Silberman. I think they also helped produce it. So it definitely was a woman-helmed film. Did you like the way it was structured and the way the friendship was built?
I thought it was really, really nice that the two main characters were girls that supported each other, that loved each other, and wanted nothing but the best for each other. It is a true... They were, you know, they're partners in crime, and I thought that was very, very sweet to see that their friendship grew, and even with the minor problems that happened throughout the movie, they bounce back and they have each other's back.
Do you feel this was just another retelling of a high school movie that instead of having male leads had female leads, or did it really feel like it came from a female point of view?
I think it came from a female point of view because it's a movie about female friendship and what that means in the modern age. And I think if you put two males in this lead, I don't think this movie would have been as fantastic as it was.
I kind of wonder what it would have been like to have a movie like that explore a really close male friendship. Because you don't get a lot of male friendship movies of that age group. Besides the point, I really did like the different viewpoint. It felt like I was watching a movie that was really going into these girls' relationship and the relationships with their parents, and they're not perfect.
No.
And I think that's the thing too, is like it would have been really like they come off kind of like jerks, you know, how they treat certain people, especially the character Molly played by Beanie Feldstein, because I felt like it was her growth was important for both the friendship to last and for at the end when she's leaving, realizing when she's going to college that the choices she made were the choices she made, and she couldn't blame other people if they went off and did other things and still got into the college. Although that scene was great. So when she finds that out.
When she finds out that the people that she thinks don't pay attention in class and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, too, is like we always assume that kids who are doing other things, we don't live, we only see them. I think the thing that this film also shows without really talking about it, we always see one or two sides of people. If the people are always seen as a partier or skater or jock, and they may be doing just as well in school as people who aren't. In fact, they might even be doing better because there's a lot more riding on them getting somewhere where they want to go. And I found that was the one part I didn't find very believable in the whole movie, was that nobody, I know they had this rule in school that people couldn't tell what school they were going to, but I don't know any high school where people aren't either bragging or parents aren't telling parents, so it gets out. People know where they're going after high school. It's out months before. You're going to Georgetown, you're going to Stanford, you're going to, so that one scene was a little hard for me to believe. But once that scene happened and it set the movie in motion, I felt like the movie was a good coming of age story. Did you feel that scene worked, where she found out that they were going to this, they were going to the same school she was going to, that one of them was going to Yale, and it freaked her out, and then she started asking everybody where they were going?
I think it does make sense because her character is set up as kind of like this nose in a book, only pays attention to what she thinks is important type of person. And so when she, like, even if the school didn't have this, like, arbitrary, like, you can't talk about your college thing, I don't think she would have paid attention until somebody went, hey, guess what, guys, I'm going to Yale, straight into her face, because of the fact that she doesn't care about these people. She's been shown to not care about these people, to think down about these people, and to have a, you know, only pay attention to her and her friend, and that's all she really cares about. And if she's the type of person that they write her off to be, she's going to, you know, the report card where it says you're one out of 1,000 people in your class, grade-wise, she's only going to be focusing on that. She's going to be focusing on her SATs and stuff. She's not going to be noticing that the same people in her class are in the same testing facility or in the same...
That's true. She really felt like she was better than everybody.
Yeah.
And when they had that little meditation scene at the very beginning where it said, yeah, you're better than everybody. That makes sense. It still was a hard scene for me too, because that kind of information gets flooded everywhere.
I thought the whole beginning part of where she's like, I felt like she would have blinders on as a character, because she's only focused on academics and libraries, and she doesn't really hang out with any of these people outside school. Because most of the time when I knew where my friends were going to college, besides the people in my like immediate homeroom class, were my friends outside school.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, maybe I was a little harsh on that, but I just remember in my high school, like, everybody who made it to an Ivy League school or a Pac-10, or at the time it was a Pac-10 school, now Pac-12 school, or some school back east or whatever, it got celebrated. I mean, the UW, not so much because I grew up in Seattle, but like people that were going to Stanford, USC, UCLA, Arizona State, Arizona, all the Ivy League schools.
Anyway, I also thought,
Michigan. When people went to Michigan for some reason, at the time, it was considered a really big school for a lot of certain academic things. And oh my God, there's like 5 or 6 people that went to Michigan. It was like a big, big freaking deal.
The thing that kind of like that same scene, which takes me out of reality, is that everybody got into an Ivy League school.
No, they're not all Ivy League. No, but there were schools that they were higher.
Yeah, well, everybody got into, because there's the setting is in L.A. and UCLA and UC San Diego are right.
And USC.
And USC are right there. We live in an area where those schools are really important and high.
Yeah, well, if you live on the West Coast, though, West Coast schools are like University of Washington, Oregon State, but there's other schools, USC, UCLA, Stanford, Berkeley. All those schools are considered really good schools to go to. And you don't have to go far inland either just to go to good schools. They're more spread out than they are back east.
Well, the thing that also made me kind of like, that sometimes it gets really hard to watch teen movies, is that they're always like, I'm going to Yale, I'm going to Harvard, I'm going to Duke. Those are like the three main schools.
Not Duke. They usually go to Harvard, Princeton, or Yale. And then if they want to show that somebody has a code for people who have no sense of humor, is that they go to Brown.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you know, they're sticks in the mud, they go to Brown, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, and so it's always those three schools, like when it's like, you know, the dancing competition movies where it's like you have to have an extra curricular so you can outweigh your academics to get into school. And your dream school is Yale, Harvard.
Well, Princeton. it's also shorthand for really good school. I mean, there's been things that have been coming out for years that maybe going to an Ivy League school isn't in your best interest. There's a lot of studies and things like that that come out saying that you may be overpaying for education there, but they're still good schools. So back to the question I was asking about the being led by a female director, do you think that got the story to be a little bit more intimate as a teenage high school drama, or do you think it didn't make a difference at all?
I think it did make a difference because Olivia Wilde at one point was a teenage girl, and I think she would know, as she was living it, what kind of emotions teenage girls go through. There's definitely some stereotypes on when it comes to adolescent teenagers, and I think sometimes the high school movies are written by somebody just packaging those stereotypes in a different box, and I think this movie definitely adds a lot of nuance and emotions that we don't really get to see in adolescent movies. In high school themed movies.
Yeah. I think another thing that she did that was great as a director is that it's really hard to get 3D persons on screen. It's pretty impossible. It's been pretty much impossible, actually.
Because you've only got 2 hours to tell a story.
Yeah.
You can't keep going on their backstory.
And so what you have to do is you have to find really good actors who can give you shades of that, so you get the impression of this person being a real person, not just a cardboard cutout. And what I thought was very interesting is that the casting choices that were made for the supporting students, each of those people had a flair or something that led you to believe that there was something more to that character, that you may not be seeing all of it in today's film, this 2-hour adventure. And I thought that was really great casting. It made because the kids weren't traditionally the hot guy, the hot girl, the hot, you know, it made it a lot more interesting. And I think that's the characterizations were a lot more real because of that. Like you said, when her being Olivia Wilde being a teenager at one point and going and directing these scenes, it felt like they were real people reacting to real situations. And sometimes in these high school movies, it does not feel like they're real people reacting to real situations. And some of the high school movies, they rely on the cliches to get the point across, where this movie didn't.
I actually think this movie did a really wonderful job in breaking those stereotypes. You know, there's that whole scene in the car with AAA, whose real name is Annabelle, about why she got that nickname and how she feels about that nickname and how she thought the boys would be joking with her, but the girls, especially the girls who were, you know, hardcore feminists, feminine power all the way, kept calling her that. She was like, I didn't understand why, you know,
they would do it.
Why they would do it, since it's everything against their ideals.
Well, it has to do, I think, with the fact that people are, true people are sometimes hypocrites and sometimes judgy. And in high school, you get both of that. It was a very good conversation in that car when she was talking about that. And that scene kind of disappointed me a little bit, because I kind of thought that they were going to go into why are boys treated differently getting around with girls, when girls go around with guys, and even in the modern age, the people that should be supporting her right to do that weren't. So it kind of just ended with that makes sense from Molly. So I thought that seems like there was more that could have been explored there. But then again, it's a 2-hour movie, and that wasn't the main focus. That was a little detour. So I understand why they didn't focus in on it.
So the design was a really big, important part of this movie.
I liked the design. The design was done really well, meaning you felt like you were living in, it was Los Angeles, but it wasn't like cookie cutter.
It wasn't a glorified Los Angeles.
Well, usually what happens when you film Los Angeles is either it's really ritzy and cool and stylized, or it's really seedy and, you know, people are lost and it's the bad parts of town. And this was definitely in the middle. This is definitely real life. So it felt like people lived in this world and they were part of this world instead of being, and the film was very beautifully shot and still had a really great design feel to it. But, I'm not saying because they shot it to be realistic background look that it wasn't a pretty film to look at. It was just, they didn't go with the overt glam of, like, you know,
palm trees, blue skies,
yeah,
McMansions.
Yeah. Like kind of like Clueless. Mm-hmm. And they didn't push that. And they didn't also don't go to the other side of it with, which is the more rough and tumble parts that would usually end up getting in when people do Los Angeles. So I like the fact that it felt like a city that people lived in and grew up in, and it felt realistic. And like the color scheme was very nice. It felt there was definitely people made those choices. They were pretty there were some pretty choices. There were some choices that were obviously more on the finer side of things, and some choices that were bolder, but it was nice. I liked it.
Do you think the colorful style of the design allowed for the movie to go into these like little like weird hyper dreamlike places, like i.e. the dance scene, the dream dance scene, and the Barbie doll high?
The Barbie doll high? It's really funny. When I saw the Barbie doll one, it reminded me of another high school or teen movie with John Cusack where there's a dancing burger and stuff kind of sequence, like animated like that. And so I just felt like, I thought it was a great callback to some of the 80s teen movies. But it also was a great way of explaining how they felt being high on this drug without actually like having two actors staring at a mirror going, it was just kind of fun. I liked it.
But do you think that it took away from the story at all?
No, because you're seeing it from their perspective. And so as long as you realize it's their perspective and it lets you see how they saw the world to begin with, because these type of situations were just the way their imagination would have heightened their reaction to what was going on. So I enjoyed it. I don't know if you want to sit there and I felt like there should have been like a third one.
There's the Barbie doll high scene. Then there's the dreamlike dance scene. And you could make an argument that the third one of the movie is them, the car scene where they're Fast and Furious-ing it into the graduation.
Yeah, I can see that. That's a melding of both the dream world and the actual world coming together.
Because, you know, nobody Fast and Furious into a football field.
So you're saying that didn't happen? That was their take on it?
I don't know. If somebody tried to do that to my high school graduation, they would have
been arrested
and all that jazz.
Yep.
So Olivia Wilde has pitched this movie as Training Day as a reference. Do you feel like this movie had those kind of elements into the design and the cinematography? There's definitely one that I definitely feel is very much like a buddy cop action movie, which is when the teacher picks him up and she walks out of the car and goes, "Girls, you need a ride." It's totally shot like...
I would say its DNA is closer to the buddy cop movies than high school movies, which is probably why it's been compared to Superbad so much, because that also has a buddy cop aspect to it. I would say that honestly, it pulls from everything. It pulls from the buddy cop movies from the 80s and 90s, like Lethal Weapon, those type of movies. Training Day, in a way, but Training Day was more, I think the part that the Training Day part of it was how somebody walks into the movie with one world viewpoint, and at the end of the movie has a completely different world viewpoint. That's the Training Day aspect to me. The more buddy cop stuff from like the 80s and 90s buddy cop movies, their friendship is that way. The way they shoot it, the way it goes with like either really long Steadicam shots, or there's like brisk editing and brisk movement, definitely loops into that. And the way the dialogue too, the dialogue is very quick and to the point, and not doesn't dance around the bushes too much. And that's also very buddy cop movie like.
Yes, sir. I definitely did see a lot of that in this movie's DNA.
Compared to Superbad when it came out, do you feel that's a fair comparison?
That's very hard to say. You know, you can definitely make some cross comparisons. You know, Beanie Feldstein is Jonah Hill's sister. There's definitely this party you got to go to, and the quest to get to this party is within the movie's plot. But I think it's also a disservice to this movie because it eliminates anything that's special about it, especially when critics were calling it the female version of Superbad, because, you know, Olivia Wilde didn't set out to go make the same movie just in a female.
No,
with female characters.
I understand why they use that type of shorthand when they're describing movies that they know are going to be reduced to sound bites. So it's much easier to say it's like a female version of Superbad, because people are going to hear that. And if they liked Superbad, they may go watch this movie. So it is a way of pushing that out there. I understand that. The problem that I have with that is it does, like you said, kind of erases any originality for the film. People don't look at it as an original film at that point. Another way they used to do it was it's like Superbad crossed with, you know, Mermaids or something like that. And people would go, okay, that's weird.
This movie is not a cross between Superbad and Mermaids. No.
I know that. But
well, there is that one pool scene.
Well, I don't think you know the Mermaids movie I'm talking about, the one with Cher.
No, I thought you were just saying Mermaids.
No, there's a movie called Mermaids with Cher and Winona Ryder. You could say things like that. I don't think it's a cross between Superbad and Mermaids, because Mermaids is a mother-daughter story. doesn't line up, but it just popped into my head. Anyway, the thing that about using, you know, another movie to describe another movie, it's very easy to do that. And so it's around everywhere. And I don't know if we're ever going to get away from it. I just, when people say things like that, I realize that's 10% of the movie. And so I walk in there with an open mind, knowing that that was not going to be an accurate description of the movie I'm going to see. Sometimes it is, but usually it's not.
Well, the thing is also, I did not particularly enjoy Superbad. It came out when I was really young, and then when I first watched it, I was slightly older, and the times had changed, so those jokes didn't land anymore. I didn't really appreciate some of the characters and things like that. And so when I saw the reviews, and also with my mom saw the reviews, oh, it's super bad for females, we didn't see it in theaters, which might have caused the fact that it didn't make its money back in the movie theaters in the box office, you know. But I really enjoyed this movie, and if I knew that it wasn't just a female version of Superbad, I think I would have seen it in theaters.
Yeah, I think it also, one thing too, is that it's hard to walk into a movie with an open mind if that's what you're told. It's like Superbad. So you walk in there thinking it's Superbad. So if you're a huge fan of Superbad, you're going to love this movie. And then you walk in there and it's not. I mean, there's similarities, high school, going to the party, certain things like that, certain adventures along the way, which is like 80% of all high school movies. And then it's hard for you to walk into the theater or watch it online without an open mind. And then it's not that movie. And some people can be pleasantly surprised. Some people will walk away and go, darn it, it wasn't that movie, and be angry at it. And it was never meant to be that type of movie or that movie. So it's just hard to relax on that when you walk into a movie. You have to tell yourself it's not going to be the same.
So another reason why some people think that this movie didn't make its box office returns is because it was released the same weekend as a lot of big budget movies like Aladdin and other Disney projects. And a lot of people, including the director J.J. Abrams, blames these big budget multi-million dollar movies for lack of smaller and independent films in the marketplace today. Do you think that movies like this one, which are smaller and independent, have changed in the landscape of things?
I think there's a place for them. The problem is that movie theaters need to make X amount of dollars on every film. So they have to turn it over really quick and make a lot of their money back in just in this 2 weeks. People have been trained over the last 20 years. Well, long on that, but it's getting shorter and shorter. Like, movies used to come to the theater and run for like 6-8 weeks. And you can still go see them 6-8 weeks down the road. That is not the norm now. It's not unheard of to see a movie in a theater at the beginning of the month and out of the theater at the end of the month. 4 weeks. And so it doesn't give you a lot of turnover to make your money off that film. So if I have to get 5 versions of the next Marvel movie to put in 5 of my theaters, and then the next, and I'm running a theater that has 10 screens and the other 5 screens are now fighting over other movies, I'm going to do that because it's going to make me more money. So I find it really interesting when people go, the landscape in Hollywood, these big budget films are pushing out low budget or medium budget films. It's like, they create it. They're the ones that are, when they rent it to it's not a rent, but you know what I'm saying? It's when movie theaters are getting those movies, there's a certain amount that goes back to the studio.
I think it's also ironic that J.J. Abrams is the one saying this, since he did Star Wars, Star Trek, and a bunch of other big budget films.
Yeah, but he also did, he's produced lower budget films. One of the things that I got to enjoy when I was a kid that you don't get to enjoy nearly as much is these smaller budget films didn't have to make so much money back. So they would make these quirky little comedies, like our quirky films. And a movie like Booksmart wasn't like the only teen comedy to come out that year or that summer or that period. And that they were coming out a lot. And so that's the thing that I think, I mean, I have a ton of teen movies when I was growing up that were coming out and are not that common right now. Although streaming services have taken over some of that, would thank God, because at least that's some fun stuff that they're doing. Although turning everything into a series isn't necessarily the best answer, but at least it's something. Do you think this movie may have had issues with the theater also because it wasn't a genre film like horror or action, and it was a teenage coming of age story?
One of the things that I think may have caused issues for this movie is that its primary audience members are 14 to 18 year old high school girls, but this movie was an R-rated movie.
Yeah, it's true. It never stopped me when I was a kid, but
no, and I understand that, but it wasn't the only woman-led comedy that had an R rating. You know, Lady Bird, which was an Oscar winner, made a bunch of its money back, was enjoyed and adored by the public, also female-led and female-directed and written, also had an R rating.
Yeah, but the audience that saw it was an older audience.
Yeah. And what happened that
was, because if all my friends went and saw it, that's not a young audience.
Yeah. Also, what happened with Lady Bird that was different than Booksmart is that Lady Bird had select theater opening. The first weekend, it was first week, couple weekends, it was select theaters. Then it grew into every movie theater. One of the things that I think that you were asking is, do you think this affected it since it wasn't like a beloved genre? Yes, I do, because guess what? We love mysteries and we love action, and we go specifically to the movie theaters to watch those genre films. And if it's not a specific genre or a specific genre people like to enjoy, they're not going to go see it.
Yeah, I also felt the marketing on it was a little weak, but that's, we can argue about that later, because I think marketing on most movies nowadays are weak unless you're making a Marvel movie.
How do you think this movie differs from the one that you, the ones that you watched as a kid?
While I was growing up, wow, there was a lot when I was growing up, and there were subgenres of them. This movie kind of reminded me of one that was called a movie that came out in the 80s called Heaven Help Us, which was about kids going to Catholic school, and it wasn't a huge hit, but I remember years later people always talking about it, and I have a feeling that this movie is going to be like that. It's going to be a movie that wasn't a huge hit in the theater, but years later a lot of people saw it, and it was really good. It talked about real things at schools, and it especially private Catholic schools, it dealt with real emotions about the kid and how he was adjusting to his life and everything. So I thought that this movie kind of reminded me of that. It didn't really, some of the other movies that are more famous, like Fast Times at Ridgemont High and some of the other ones, I'm kind of like, yeah, those were good ones too, but there was when I was younger, and I hate to say this, there was a lot of subgenres in the teen movies, even ones that went into horror, like the teen slasher film. And there's ones that went into action, like the Adventures in Babysitting, and the teen movies that were like, that went off into these different subgenres. So there was more of them to compare this to. Where nowadays it seems like they come out, you get one or two a year, and that's about it. Although, like I said, there's some streaming series now that have taken up that mantle, which are hit and miss, quite frankly. Some of them are really miss, and people are giving them praise, and I can't figure out why. Because I'm like going, this is just an hour and a half screenplay stretched over six episodes, and I'm bored.
Sometimes I'm tired of the blank check philosophy with Netflix.
Well, no, I mean, there's stories out there that need to be told, that can be told and exciting. And there's some stories that you're watching streaming, like, I can't believe this got okayed. And it's actually kind of a nice surprise. But there are literally some of those limited series are definitely movie screenplays that have been lengthened into episodic television, and some of those work and some of them don't. Some of them are, they're a 90-minute idea, and that's it.
So was this the film that you were expecting when I said, let's watch Booksmart,
yes and no. I mean, yes, I expected it to be a coming-of-age story about a friendship between two girls going into womanhood. I thought it was very interesting. I love the fact they had a really good way of talking about intimate things between the girls that didn't sound like they were just mimicking boys talking about things, which I thought was really awesome. So it made the characters feel way more, much more real. I always feel sometimes when there's a way of this, like, girls can talk dirty too, and then they go into it. I'm like, oh no, you're just trying to talk dirty now. I mean, don't get me wrong, I know girls can talk dirty. I'm just saying sometimes it feels like they're just mimicking what they've seen on screen already.
Yeah, this one definitely had their own inside jokes about the body and in a very safe space too. And so I really, yeah.
Yeah. So it was great humor. It was inclusive humor too. So it was a lot more fun to watch. And I also like the fact that all the characters felt like real people, even when they were being judged by the two at the beginning, you could see that there's a realness to them.
Yeah, they're not just Regina George, you know.
When you first watched it, was it what you thought it was going to be, or did you think it was really going to be a female version of Superbad?
I thought it was going to be a female version of Superbad, where I knew it was filmed. I mean, I knew it was directed by Olivia Wilde. I didn't realize that it was also written by female writers until after I watched it for the first time. But we got it on the Dollar Tree section, you know, the $1 movies. And I was like, oh, I'll watch it. And one of the things that I thought was going to happen was what you just talked about, where it was a movie designed by a man just copy and paste female characters.
Yeah, no, I definitely wasn't. And I knew it wasn't going to be that way because of some of the things I had read. But yeah, I definitely liked the fact that.
Well, I also watched it 2019, so
yeah,
they were still getting the super bad new reviews. So,
but
and I think it also adds. I think now that we're seeing a lot of female driven movies, I definitely do think this is a good movie to add to that Parthenon.
I thought it did a good job of highlighting the parts that were more interesting, and the maybe some of the cliche stuff that was or cliche feeling that from like you would see in other high school movies or other films about kids of this age, they minimized. So it didn't overtake the film. They were in the backdrop. And the actors did a really good job of really making the characters feel more realistic than just be like, I'm the smart person, so I'm going to be smart always. And so I thought that was really good. It was still part of a genre, the high school coming of age, last day at school movie.
Would you recommend this movie to anyone?
Oh, yeah, I would recommend it. It's a fun movie to watch. I would definitely probably recommend it to people who are like multi-generational in their families. Or people just want to watch a really good, funny movie that has a heart. I mean, I think it's another thing that this movie has a really good heart, and the relationship between the two girls is really the story of their love for each other versus all the adventures and love throughout the entire film. And I think it's a really good, positive way to show female friendships, and that they're not so neurotic about their friendship that one little thing blows it all up.
Yeah, actually the things that do blow up the friendship, because you know it's a coming of age story, so you definitely have to have the really tight friend group that blows up and then comes back together at the end. The things that make the friendship crack a little bit are systemic things. They're not just like, you got drunk and insulted me. No, it's like,
They're actually issues with the friendship that they have to address.
That they have to address in order for them to both grow as people separately and as to grow into this friendship.
Yeah.
Which I think is really good. I would also recommend this movie because I do think it is, has strong female influences through this whole movie. So if you're tired of watching the high school buddy movie with stoners, but I think I also just, again, it had a great heart. Everybody likes a good movie with funny jokes and a great heart.
I really hope you liked our conversation about Booksmart. I had a fun time talking with Izzy about this film.
If you did enjoy this, please subscribe to our podcast. And you can follow us on Instagram at TML, A Journey Through Cinema. On Twitter at TML. And Facebook under The Movie Log 1.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.